This is the Volleyball Coaching Wizards podcast, covering everything coaching, motivated and inspired by interviews and conversations with some of the world's great volleyball coaches. To learn more about the project, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com. Now here are your hosts, John Foreman and Mark Levigeau.
Welcome to episode 10 of the podcast. Jenny McDowell leads off with an audio clip in which she talks about her approach to selecting captains and the responsibilities that she gives them with respect to her NCAA Division III volleyball team at Emory University. Mark and I then take the discussion in our own directions in terms of what we look at and how we approach the role of the captain, developing captains, and things along those lines. So hope you get something out of it.
How do you have a process for selecting the captains? Is there any specific criteria you look for, or is that something that's a bit more dynamic within any given group?
I think it's different with any given group. This year we have two rising seniors that are both outstanding leaders. They're going on. Some years we vote and we tell them when they vote, we will take that into consideration, but ultimately the staff will decide because I think it's very, very important to hear what they have to say. But on the other hand, I think as a staff, we know what we're looking for and what that particular team needs. So we've had two captains, up to four captains, just based on the makeup of the team. For instance, I just asked our two rising seniors, do you need a third to help you lead this team? And they're talking about it right now amongst themselves. So, and they're going to let me know. And if they feel like they need another one, then, we'll go about figuring out who that's going to be. So I think every team's a little bit different, and we adapt our selection based on the team, not just one particular way we do it.
Okay. You mentioned the vote. Do the players know the results of the voting, or is it just for you?
It's just for us. We don't even tell them the day we're going to vote, and they have to come. I know it sounds funny, but they have to come to our assistant, tell them who they want, and then the assistant puts it up on the chalkboard before anybody else sees it. So they have, they can't write it on a piece of paper without their name on it. They have to own it. And then after that, we as a staff will discuss it, and then we'll make the decision.
Okay. All right. What responsibilities do you assign to your captains? You kind of touched on this a little bit, but can you go a little further?
We give them a lot of responsibility from, again, the organization of it to integrating the new players to the team. We'll start out the season going on a team retreat. I've asked them to decide what they would like to do at that time. We're bringing in a bunch of new players. We have a large freshman class coming in, and so we ask them to really think about that, what's going to be important while we're away for a couple days. We ask them to let us know as a staff if they think anything's going in the wrong direction. We have weekly captains meetings just to talk about the team and where we are and if there's anything that we need to know. And then, they oversee it at that point. You have the typical, okay, these are the uniforms that we're wearing on this day, and these are, the practice uniforms we have this day. I mean, there's that basic organization part of it, but it's important for them to be that liaison between us, the bridge. And they only bring things to us that they can't handle themselves or they believe we need to know.
From my perspective, I share Jenny's philosophy in terms of, for me, captain selection is not a popularity contest, which is what it definitely can come down to if you give players 100% control over the process, especially for younger teams, I think. Maybe you get a little bit more maturity with older teams or adult teams, professionals in that regard. But for me, the first big element of a captain is that I need to be able to communicate with them. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be focused on not only obviously picking somebody who I think is a leader in the squad, but also somebody who I will be able to interact with regularly on an ongoing basis effectively, because I personally rely on my captains to give me a lot of feedback.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting discussion, and it's about, in the beginning, you know, what is the role of the captain? What's the responsibility? What's the point of the captain? And it varies in different situations. And in the college environment that Jenny's talking about, where there's a fixed hierarchy and not a fixed hierarchy, but longevity provides certain benefits. I think that you can approach it in one particular way. In juniors, I think you approach it in other ways. Working with professionals, the captain is has not only a role in the team, has a role in the team, but not only, also has a role in the club, also has a role in the community, and is a representative of the club and of the team.
Right.
The captain is also a in a sense the union rep for the players, has to represent the interests of the players to the coach, to the club, and has to represent the interests of the player, of the coach, to the players. And the European model where I am is a very traditional model, and it's nearly always embodied in a single person. We would never I don't know of a situation where there have been multiple captains. It's certainly common that there is a probably what you call a leadership group, in Australian terms, a leadership group, in German it's called a Mannschaftsrat, so like a committee of players that represents the team. But still, the captain would be the most important figure in that. And choosing that player, I've never had a vote on it. I can't imagine that I would ever have a vote on it, particularly not in the way that things work out or the way that things are here, because for one, at that moment in the season, when you would have a vote, players don't really know each other very well, because they're coming from different places, not everybody's in the preparation period for the same length of time. So I take into account all of those things, and also the interaction of that player, of a player inside the group. So the players that are actually leaders, you can pick out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree that you're right. The role of the captain in the European sporting context is very, very significant. Whereas in American sports, maybe not quite as much. You've got leaders for sure, but it doesn't always come down to, so and so is the captain, so and so isn't. Let me ask you this: how case that you have a clear captain, mm-hmm. and how often is it that you maybe have to choose between two or a handful of individuals?
It's a good question. I'm just trying to go through. I've mostly been in situations where, for one reason or another, the choice of the captain was clear, either through longevity inside the club, or through playing level, because the level, we haven't talked about that, but the level of play is an important part of the captain's role, and because in the end that's the thing that people see the most, people pay the most attention to. And
I think especially on the men's side of the game, your captain has to be a significant player in the squad.
Mm-hmm.
Starter. I mean, really, really needs to be a starter. And it's probably heavily skewed in that direction in the women's side of the game, although you might be able to get away with somebody who isn't always a starter because of the group dynamics. But I think you're right. It is much easier for a captain to be somebody who's a starter than it would be for a non-starter.
Yeah, so to get back to your question, like I said, it's always been reasonably clear, either one outstanding player or one stronger personality or one player longest in the club. On the two situations that it wasn't really clear, one time with a new team, just with 12 new players, I picked the setter, basically. He was the most experienced guy, and I also had a pretty quick rapport with him, so we had a decent personal contact. The other situation, which was really not optimal, we had no real leaders in the team. It was just the guy who'd been in the club the longest and had the biggest identification with the fans, and spoke the language, which is sometimes an important factor also.
Yeah, that was one of those things that I had to think about myself in Sweden was, do I try to pick a captain who's a Swede, or is it going to be one of the three American players?
Yeah.
And ideally, I would love to have been able to say, okay, we're going to have a Swedish captain because we're a Swedish team. Mm-hmm. The language isn't a huge deal in Scandinavian countries because everybody speaks English, or the vast majority of them do anyway. So it's not that much of a thing. But I can definitely see that being the case in other places. It just turned out that from day one in my squad, our American setter took charge. I mean, she's the total alpha in the group, and it was clear from the beginning. So there wasn't much of a discussion, especially when the captain from last year decided that she was going to focus on beach volleyball. And no other Swedish player is older than 21, I think.
Yeah.
So, I kind of described it as being a squad where, in a school equivalent, you've got 3 4-year starter seniors, and then you've got a bunch of sophomores and freshmen.
Yeah.
In terms of the experience and the skill level and all that. So just from an age and experience perspective, it ended up being a relatively simple decision. But those considerations you talked about definitely were a factor in there.
Yeah, the standing in the team is a really important one. I've had a bad experience with, not with the captain particularly, but in choosing the leadership group, and the first year I had the leadership group, it was I chose the, I had the most experienced guy, then the sort of the German guy, the most experienced, and the captain. The German guy, the local guy, and then a younger guy. So he was sort of the leader of the young guys. Then there was a German, and then the oldest, most experienced. And I thought in that way that I would be able to have direct contact with all three, with different parts of the group, and it worked. It worked really well with those three personalities. And the following year we had a completely new group, and And so I chose a new leadership group beforehand using the same model, for want of a better description. So some new guys coming in, so I chose one of them as a representative of the new guys. Then I had the same, the Germans and the older guy. It ended up being a huge problem because the leader or the appointed leader of the new guys, he had no position in the group, and certainly no position as a leader of any part of the group, and it ended up causing a fair bit of animosity. Not only that, but that was certainly an element of what turned out to be not a particularly pleasant situation.
All right, the leader group thing makes me wonder just about how big a team you need to really make that valuable. Because we did it. I know for 1 year we did something like it at Brown, where basically we had the captains, but we also had representatives from each of the classes also involved. And I don't remember it being particularly useful that year. And that could have just been composition of personalities. But it just strikes me that if you've only got 12 players or whatever, at a certain point that your leadership committee is a significant fraction of your squad. you wonder about the marginal gains to be had. Now, I can understand it if you're talking about a rugby team or an American football team where you've got masses of players in different positions. Sometimes you don't, they operate on opposite sides of the ball, so to speak, so they don't interact necessarily too much directly as players. So, you've got a lot of different constituencies at work. But in volleyball, where everything is so, as we talked about before, interconnected, it seems easier to just kind of work everything on a team scale and have to deal and work with individuals as needed, one-on-one or, maybe in very small groups.
Yeah, I think a volleyball group is, in that sense, a pretty homogeneous group. The players spend all their time, more or less all their time together. You don't have to bring people in from other areas, or you don't have to create artificial links between different parts of the group, unless of course you have a situation for age, or there can be natural boundaries in a group. If you've got four or five younger guys and four or five adults who are married, there's a natural division there, or foreigners and locals can be a natural division, and sometimes you have to create an artificial link between those groups. But in a sense, you could bring it back to Sue Gazansky's point about building the team culture, in that it's what you do every day, and the links between the parts of the group are also established every day in the way you go about your work.
Yeah, and actually we'll talk about it as well in an upcoming episode based on some thoughts from Ismo Paltuarvo. Let's shift things over to the other side in terms of talking about responsibilities. You talked about on a professional club, the captain has responsibilities not just to the team, but also beyond, to the club, to the community, to the supporters. Why don't you just outline those a little bit?
The first thing for a captain is in lots of places the captain is the public figure or the public face of the club, and is asked to do more public events, spend time with sponsors, spend time with journalists, and for that reason, it can sometimes be desirable to have a local as a captain, just for that reason. That reason alone, the fans in general like to have some connection to the team, some kind of identifications figure in the team. Often that's the player that's been in the club the longest, or it's the best player over a period of time. Sometimes that can be an important role of the captain, the liaison with the fans, because as time goes by, fans become a little more demanding somehow. What they expect for their fanhood, what they expect in return for their fanhood, that can be important too.
And they want you to win.
Sometimes it's not always clear what fans want exactly.
True. If you don't play a player, you get yelled at. If you do play a player, you get yelled at. If you win, but not by enough, you get yelled at. If you don't win, you get yelled at. Yeah.
If you win, but the game's boring, then you can have problems.
Yeah.
My general idea is that the fans always want something different.
True.
Although you could use the same thing for the you could have the same conversation about clubs sometimes, club presidents.
Yeah, you could. All right, let's shift back to the role of the captain within the team. What sort of responsibilities do you assign to the captain, or do you expect of the captain in terms of their role, I guess, as partly as your liaison to the team? Largely as your liaison to the team, I suppose.
I'll talk to the captain often, at least two or three times a week, to get a gauge of what the mood is in the group. Depending on the relationship, then he will come to me at different times and say, this or this is happening, or this guy is having problems or doing great, or whatever. It's important for me to have an idea of what the sort of the workload is for the team, and a good relationship with the captain is really important to understand what the guy's sort of fatigue level is, for example.
Right.
And can be the other way. If I see something in particular, I ask the captain to address a situation inside the group. If it's a general thing, if it's a specific player who I think might need this or that in a preparation for a game. How we prepare for a game, I might ask for some specific things. So it's a back and forth along those lines.
Yeah, no, it's the same for me. I look to my captain to keep me informed on, like you say, kind of the status of the squad. You know, are they happy? Are they frustrated? Do they want to do more of this? Do they want to do less of that? Are there any friction points that we might have to address? In my case, my captain being my setter, there's also considerations about managing certain hitters, just whether it's a personality perspective or encouraging their development in a certain way. You know, what's going on with them from a social perspective? Because as we've kind of talked about, like with Sue, some teams the social perspective is important, you know, that they actually spend time together outside, but for other teams it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
So kind of keeping tabs on that sort of stuff just to see if there's anywhere that I may need to encourage something or discourage something. you know, it's always great when the whole team gets along, you know, and you can kind of just step back and let them go, and that's it. Don't need to worry about it. But it doesn't always work that way. And obviously, you know, even with the captain, there's also the perspective of them as the player. And sometimes it can be tricky to disentangle the two things and make sure you're giving the captain the sufficient time and feedback and whatever in their role in the team as a leader. Because, I mean, sometimes you have to coach the captain on being a leader and also as a role as a player.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sometimes the requirements of the job aren't fulfilled by a single person or the skills that person already has, and you have to work with them on that. But I never really go too deeply into that. The captain needs to firstly perform well. That's the first responsibility for all players. So I don't want to impinge on that in any way. And then afterwards we just work sort of guiding in different directions and hopefully reaching the best possible place.
Right. Yeah. First captain as role model for the rest of the squad is what I tend to look for.
That's another role that we didn't talk about specifically, the role model.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and part of it is, you know, the right captain, obviously, as you talked about, reflects what you want the club to reflect when they're, you know, in public, when they're the face of the team and the face of the club. But from a coaching perspective, you also want your captain to reflect the values that you want in the team from all the other players.
Yes.
But to your point about developing leadership skills, or my point, or one of our points, it gets confusing at times. I had a situation when I was at Exeter with the captain of the women's team, who was excellent role model, good work ethic, starting player, all that sort of thing. But she needed to grow into the role of a take charge leader, other than kind of administratively. I mean, administratively, she was as good as you were going to get. Mm-hmm. But it took her time to develop to the point where she could kick her teammates in the butt when it needed to be done. And, you know, not all captains or leaders are comfortable with that. Some never will be. They lead in other ways, and some do it automatically, maybe too much, and we need to take them back down the other direction. That was one of the clear progressions, and she was nervous about it. She would come up to me after training. Was I too hard on them? Was it, you know, was too difficult? You know, was I, you know, too bitchy in this case? And I was like, believe me, I'll tell you if you're pushing things too far. that's my job, is to watch that stuff. And if I think you're going a little over, then I will reel you in. But other than that, there should be no issue of you setting expectations and expecting your teammates to meet them. That's your job.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Anything else on responsibilities or desirable characteristics or anything like that before we wrap up?
I think that, as always, we've done a great job of covering everything.
As always. All right, we'll finish there.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and more, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com/podcast. Got an idea for a future episode or want to ask a question? Send an email to podcast@volleyballcoachingwizards.com.